This is the Genuine Humans podcast, brought to you by Social Element. I'm Tamara Littleton.
And I'm Wendy Christie.
In our podcast, we'll discover the stories of the leaders behind the brands and the trailblazers who are making a real difference in our industry. We'll delve into how they got to where they are today.
And we'll hear about the genuine humans who supported and influenced them along the way.
Welcome back to Genuine Humans podcast. And Wendy Christie, my fabulous co-host, is here as well, as always. How are you doing, Wendy?
Yes, very well, thank you. Very happy to be here. How are you?
I'm really good, really good. The sun came out, which was just, it makes all the difference, doesn't it?
It really, really does. I think we've had about 6 days without rain now. So I'm like, it's summer.
And it's officially summer.
Just jinxed it, yeah.
So I'm very happy today because we have got a fabulous guest on. We have Jane Loring on the podcast. And Jane has had over 2 decades experience in the performance-driven media tech industry, including my favourite retro one, handbag.com, because I think I was working at the BBC when we worked with handbag.com. But more recently, Jane was at Spotify and now has her dream job at Microsoft as the Director of Sales in Media and Communications. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you. So pleased to be here.
So, Jane, I'm going to ask the question that I love asking my guests, which is, how did you get to where you are now? Do you want to give us a bit of a flavour of like how you got into the industry and your early career?
Of course. And it's really interesting to reflect on this master plan that never was as to how I ended up here. So I suppose going right back a little bit, and I think it's nearly 3 decades, actually. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. So I left school with the ambition of going to drama school, actually, to be an actress.
Oh, wow.
this didn't quite end up with the same result as I'd perhaps planned. But I took a year out and started working and actually applied for a postgraduate job at IBM, which I saw advertised in the Evening Standard. We're going back a while when we used to look at the job section there. Applied for that, just sort of thinking it would be good experience to apply for it. But actually, fortunately, I was lucky enough to get into their postgrad scheme without a degree. So continued to apply to drama school, got a place at the Guildhall School of Drama in London, which was a real, you know, really successful audition. So I was really delighted, but sort of fell in love with working at IBM, which is very different to training to become, you know, the next Helen Mirren. Anyway, so declined my place and joined IBM on their sort of, they had sort of like an IBM Academy. I don't know if they still do it. I think they do, where you're pretty much taken through best practice in business, in sales training, in management. So I had about 10 years there where I absolutely learnt everything I think that I still utilise in my toolbox today, from negotiations to working with big enterprise clients. I was flying all around the world. You know, it was just a fantastic job. And I was probably one of very few females there at that time, which is also been quite a theme through especially the earlier years in tech. Met some fantastic friends that are still really close friends for life, and really never looked back because I absolutely loved it. So that was sort of the start point, that selling mainframe computers to banks, not going into the theatre.
It's quite a different world.
Yes. And then everybody then thought I was completely mad because I resigned. So the reason I resigned was I decided I wanted to go into the new world of the internet. And I had been doing a lot of studying and thought it would be very exciting to change careers, but take all of the things that I'd sort of learned as great business basics into a sort of more of a new media career, with working within advertising and content on the internet. So in 1999, I left and took a really huge pay cut and went to a company called Fish 4. I don't know if anyone will remember this business, but it was all of the local press amalgamated into one website where you could fish for homes and cars and jobs.
Oh, God, yes, I do.
Do you remember?
I do.
And
yeah.
It was run by a couple of people, Jonathan Turpin and Jonathan Lyons, who are ex-BBC and based out of Hammersmith. And one of the first, my first memories, we all had to dress as fish and walk around the tube giving out leaflets. And I did think at this point, well, you know, I was in the south of France with IBM at the Cannes Film Festival, and now I'm in the middle of Hammersmith dressed as a fish. But, you know, it was exciting, and I was learning a lot of new skills and a lot about a new and very, very exciting industry. Then I got fairly quickly promoted because I had a lot of experience in doing all those business basics, running teams, business planning, working with really big enterprise clients.
Yeah.
And then I was running their advertising team there. But within about 18 months, then somebody who's also a big feature in my life still, Nancy Cruikshank, who was setting up Handbag with The Telegraph and Boots, she headhunted me from, which is a real risk for her, to go and be their ad director. So I think this was a really pivotal point in my career, actually, for many reasons. And you probably remember Handbag. It was
huge at the time.
Yeah,
absolutely,
it really
huge,
was.
Wasn't it?
It was huge. And it was sort of competing with iVillage in the US. And Boots and The Telegraph really wanted to launch the first sort of female portal for content, for advice, for shopping, for everything for female. And obviously we had the huge benefit of in-shop promotion with Boots, The Telegraph's audience, and it grew very quickly. So I went in as the ad director, and we hired a lot of people, and we famously had some of the best parties I think the industry has ever thrown. But this was a really pivotal role for me because suddenly I then really got to understand the media landscape, working with The Telegraph, working with Boots, working with all the advertising agencies, working with Nancy, who was the MD and then CEO. And she's been a mentor to me till now and has actually been responsible for some of my biggest risk taking and is a very, very good friend of mine now. And it was really hardcore because we had to, you know, we had to report into the board of Telegraph and Boots, and we had to, you know, really achieve the numbers that there was a lot of funding that had gone into that business. So I was there about 6 years and we had huge success. It was really a fantastic time for accelerating business and learning about how to drive a team to really have a growth mindset, because obviously nobody really knew what we were, but then suddenly everybody knew who we were. And the business eventually sold to Hearst magazine, magazine group. So that was the point where I then had to make a decision about whether to go to Hearst or not. And I very fortunately found out there was a role at Microsoft. So going back, I know I've just returned to Microsoft, but there were roles in their Microsoft advertising team. And one of the roles was sort of director of sales and strategy. And at the time, no one really knew what Microsoft advertising, MSN, was. And went through the interview process and thought, well, this is going to be an amazing role for me because I can learn so much about tech. And although I'd obviously really found my feet and understanding about media and advertising and all of those things, this was going to be throwing me right into product development and understanding go-to-market product strategy. And of course, working on huge amounts of business. So I joined there and I had a really big team there. I think it was bigger than Handbag. It's probably 50 to 60 people, but all different diverse teams, from product market strategy to sales excellence to category development. So for me, it was a huge learning around different business strands. And we were also in a very good place. Everybody wanted to work with Microsoft advertising. Everyone wanted to test Xbox. It was a really exciting period in the industry, and also perfect timing for that particular team. And we won a lot of awards, and I'm still very close with a lot of that team. We had a really good run of success. I also had an all-female team in one of my teams, which was very unusual then.
Very unusual, yeah.
But it was really unusual. And I was fortunate enough to be put on Microsoft Fast Track, and I went to Maui and met Steve Ballmer, and Bill Gates came over, and so it was really fantastic. Spent a lot of time in Seattle. So really, the learning curve there was really fast, and I really loved it. Met some of the smartest people I, you know, still know today. And then Nancy Cruikshank got back in touch with me and said, there's a company called Mode Media, which was previously known as Glam Media, and it was a very mm-hmm. big female ad network in the US, and they were looking for an MD. And she said, I think you should meet the board. And I said, look, I've never been an MD. And she's like, well, I think you should meet the board. And then met the board, really clicked with them, flew to New York for an interview, got stuck in the dust cloud. Some things were pretty stressful. And then secured the role to be their managing director for the UK. And that role was to really grow the UK and then European business. They had a really big footprint in New York, in America. So we had to sort of, we were very early stage of using influencers. We had to grow the content piece, grow out the sort of network of publishers we wanted to work with, grow the audience, work with the advertising agencies. And so I suppose I transferred a lot of the learnings from previously, especially at Microsoft, to running all those different functions. Mm. We grew very fast. It was an absolutely brilliant role. We filed for an IPO and didn't get a second filing. And actually, unfortunately, 5 years later, the company went under. So it was some of the highlights of my career were working there. And then one of the worst days of my career when you have to tell the team that actually we're not going to continue anymore. But again, it was fantastic for me because I learned how to, you know, manage a business. I learned how to work really closely with a US board. So it was really fantastic 5 years.
And that theme of you've been headhunted quite a lot throughout your career, I think that's definitely coming through, that these people are spotting your talent and then pulling you in as well.
I think also there weren't a lot of female leadership. There wasn't a lot of female leaders to, and these businesses, if you look at Handbag and also Glam, they were all about females. So you really don't, they really would like a female leader. Yeah. But yes, I've been very fortunate to have people really have my back, which is why I want to pay it forward now with people in my network.
Fantastic. And so from Glam, that must have been tough having to sort of pick yourself up from that position though. And then What happened next?
Well, it was very interesting because I immediately got phone calls to see if myself and some of the team want to just quickly transfer to another business, because we were actually ready to go as a sort of quite well-known top-performing sales team, really. So I was lucky enough to, I think it was just a matter of weeks, join a company called Playbuzz, which was in a similar space, earlier stage startup. Joined them as VP of content and sales for Europe, took some of the team with me, as many as I could, in all honesty, because people were obviously desperately trying to secure roles. And I was there for, I think, just over 2 years. They were an Israeli startup, so I had some fantastic visits to Tel Aviv, expanded my network there. And then after that, I did another Israeli startup for a year. And then I moved into the world of influencer.com. So there was a couple of shorter stints in startup, which also is really good learning, because then you've been in the corporate world, you've been in a scale up, and then in a startup, it's a whole different acceleration pace, and you need to be really flexible on your strategy and all those things. And then I joined influencer.com as their COO. And I'm trying to remember how I think I got an introduction to Ben and Casper through somebody. So Ben and Casper, very young entrepreneurs. Casper was quite famous as a YouTuber. And I joined them as their business as their COO. And this was also really fantastic. It's such a young, early stage startup with a lot of investment, a lot of interest. Worked with them just on really setting up the business, getting it operationally effective, helping with anything really, from stocking the fridge
up
to presenting it. They had a very, very successful business and still have, but then unfortunately COVID hit, and influencers at that point, their main body of investment and interest was travel influencer. So there was a lot of resetting that had to happen. And I left the business during COVID, and I'm still very close with the business today, and they're doing great. But COVID was really tough at that time for those sorts of businesses. And then I thought, well, let's see how COVID pans out. I thought this will be a few months.
Oh God, we all thought that, didn't we? Maximum 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. And then some people that I worked with at Microsoft were at Spotify, and they suggested that I interview to be their director of international sales. And so I thought, well, yeah, it's a fantastic business. Let me interview for that. And then I was lucky enough to get that role. So I was back in the sort of corporate world, but from my kitchen. I didn't meet my team for a year.
Crazy,
it's an international team, you know, so it was very challenging, but really, really exciting. And absolutely love working in that business. And we obviously did return to the office. I did meet my team a year later, and then spent another year working from their office, traveling around, looking after partner sales, international business, hubbed out of London, understanding a lot more about the music business. That's all very interesting and new to me. So yes, I did that for a number of years. And as you said at the start, I have recently rejoined Microsoft, and I was always extremely keen to potentially go back to Microsoft. For me, it's all about learning and development. So I'm not in the advertising or media team. I'm running their enterprise team, which works with media and telco businesses. So I'm now learning all about AI, data, lots of new products for me to get my head around. And that's something that was really important to me to keep developing myself. And it's a completely different way of business. So I've been there for 3 months and I'm absolutely loving it.
Love that. And then what's really interesting to me is because I think we were working in the same sort of time in the early internet days, or World Wide Web as it was called.
Yes.
Then I do wonder if it drives a real kind of curiosity and passion about always learning, because I don't know about how you felt about it, but for me it felt like we were defining the rules, and
yes.
Wendy was at AOL at the same time, and it is that kind of just passion around the always searching for the new, I think.
I agree, and I don't know whether it's because of the nature of the industry we were in or the way we are that made us venture into these different types of industries. But no, I agree, and I think when I reflect, I've been extremely lucky and have had some great support, but I've also been really resilient through lots of different things that have happened and changed in those different companies. And I say to people that I do a lot of coaching with, resilience is so important. It's to me, it's navigating some of these businesses and some of these difficult conditions. Resilience is really undervalued sometimes.
Totally.
Let's go back even further, if you don't mind, Jane. I'd like to sort of pick at some of those themes and try to work out if what you were like as a child has really influenced where you are so far. You mentioned, for instance, that age 16 you left school and you wanted to go into acting. Is that something that you'd always wanted to do as a child, or did you have any different ideas?
So yeah, I had dinner with my father last Friday and I asked him this question. He said, you were always a bit of a show off. And charming.
I'm sorry. Carry on, Jane. I haven't seen that at all.
I absolutely loved to be in the English and drama groups and all of those things from a very young age. I do remember sort of dressing up at home a lot and behaving, acting as if I was in a different character. My sister also had dinner with us on Friday and she said I was very annoying.
So I bet you were glad you'd asked.
But no, I really had a fascination for performance and singing and acting and going to things and trying to get involved with things from a very, very young age, actually.
How was your environment generally as a child and how important do you think that has been?
It was very happy and secure, brilliant schooling, great teachers. In fact, my English teacher, Miss Bowman, who was a huge, I can vividly remember her supporting me, and I did some writing for the newspaper and pushing me into amateur dramatics. I hadn't seen her for, well, goodness me, 30 years. And when my mother died, Miss Bowman was at the place that her funeral took place, at an art exhibition, because there was another. And I saw her that day. I mean, this weird stuff, isn't it? But very secure, happy childhood. Parents were so supportive of us doing, you know, what we loved. Gave us a lot of confidence, my sister and I think, to follow our dreams. And even when I went and got the job at IBM, they didn't sort of try and dissuade me anyway to either go to do my degree or to stay at work. So very supportive and very happy.
That's wonderful. And so this sense of resilience, I suppose that could have either come from being given that confidence as a child or through the experiences that you've had with various changes in your career. So where do you think that did come from?
Well, I think that, you know, our grandparents, we came from, my father's saved and saved to buy their first house. Mother and father both worked really hard. Even when we had setbacks, they would really just get on with it. So I think it was observing some of those behaviours in our family as well. And also, we weren't pushed to do anything, but we were sort of encouraged to work really hard from as soon as we could, you know, go and get some pocket money and things like that. So, and Dartford Girls Grammar it was a really good girls' school, but it really sort of pushed the pupils to take on challenges and to really push themselves out of their comfort zone, which I think also had an effect.
Definitely. In a safe environment as well.
Yeah.
And you mentioned one of your teachers there. Was there anyone else in particular that you looked up to as a child?
Well, the headmistress. I mean, goodness me, she ruled that school. I had fantastic family, friends, relatives. I had a cousin. We could talk about her a bit later. But my parents' friends were really quite inspirational people, and I remember a lot of the females being really making a big impact on me, and the way that they were very confident and approached challenges and seemed a bit unusual, actually, when I was little. They were big characters.
And how about, coming more up to date again, you talked about Nancy as being someone who's clearly had a lot of influence in your career and given you a lot of support. Have there been any other genuine humans that you'd like to call out for having been influential or supportive?
There's so many, isn't there? This is the challenge. I don't want to not name check people. You know, my sister, my really best friends have been amazing support to me. I've had some really traumatic things happen in my personal life, which we'll probably touch on in a bit. I've got, you know, great support from my family and people like Nancy, but there have been other people. I can honestly say that all my bosses have been amazing and really great friends and allies and really coached me and really helped me take risks. Currently in my new role, my new boss, Mike, has been amazing, helping me learn. And so many to really talk about in the industry. There's so many amazing people that I've worked with and know through social groups or, you know, industry groups, women in tech. There's too many to really say. And I think people do underestimate the value of your close network and how brilliant that can be as a help on your career, but also just generally in life. And something I probably in my 20s and early 30s didn't really understand as well as I do now, that it's huge. And I encourage a lot of people I coach to really think about that, you know, the power of those people and the support they give you.
So important to nurture those relationships.
And I think also being very conscious of where you are spending your time, because I think as life gets busier, it becomes very hard to stay on top of all the different networks, but actually being really clear of which ones you want to sort of give more to and as well, I think that's
really
important.
And you can't do everything, so it's also good to try and dip in and out of others as much as you can. But yes, I think you do need to be able to prioritize and also just expand your network to other people so that they can also start to grow it and nurture. So, but I do think that has changed a lot in the last 10 years. There's a lot more access, especially for female leadership, tech. There's a lot more than there used to be in my experience. And so I really try and nurture those.
Just thinking about you and your leadership style, are you able to sort of like just describe what is your leadership style?
So I am an empathetic leader. And I think that in my earlier career, that was sort of seen as a bit of a weakness. And now I think people understand that that's a real superpower and strength. Mm. I'm very direct, so I'm aware that sometimes I have to realise that maybe I'm very straight talking. But, you know, I just want to nurture people. I love coaching and want everybody to do well that works with me. And I think not taking yourself too seriously, because sometimes these roles, they can be quite overwhelming and there's a lot of responsibility. I like people to get to know who I am as a, you know, everything about me. I'm very open. I like to sort of lead by example and not sort of just sit in an office and sort of direct people. I like to really be involved in the industry. I have a real passion for it and I have a love of tech and being in the market as such with clients. So I think I'm pretty hands-on, but I also like people just to manage their own business, and that's how I like to be managed. So I think it's good to be aware that people don't want you involved in everything. And then I also like to take a lot of time with the team, you know, whether, you know, it's doing something outside of our day-to-day or just working on projects together. So I'm very focused with the people.
And Jane, one of the things that you were talking about is the fact that there have been times where there weren't many women in leadership roles in tech, and you've been kind of a real pioneer there. But how could the tech industry change to support more women in leadership roles?
Mm. Well, first of all, it has changed and it is changing.
Yeah.
The numbers are still not great in pure tech leadership. I think it's really still very low, 20 to 30% type numbers in the UK. Look, a lot of women don't start in tech. A lot of women are not encouraged, really, even. This is improving a lot. But even, you know, I've got three nieces and they're all sort of going in to do things that they're not thinking about tech as a career. So I think there's a lot of early stage education that should be taking place. When you are lucky enough to get into a great tech business, and I see it now at Microsoft, there's a lot of encouragement on women and some of the areas where women perhaps in tech are not as confident. So I think there's a lot of in-business training and support that's needed. There's early stage advice needed. And then I think some of the groups we've talked about, you know, encouraging more and more women to be involved with groups like Tech Her. And so I think that there's a lot that we can do as more senior females, but then also I see a lot from the leaders at Microsoft, the male leaders also helping women and really encouraging adoption and trying to find talent in the market. So I think there's quite a few things, but it has changed a lot, I'm delighted to say. And then I think as well, you know, we have a duty of care as leaders to really mentor and bring through female talent and try and really encourage it into our teams. And that, you know, even recently I've been interviewing people for my team and I just had a huge percentage of male applications. You know, there weren't that many female applicants. So there's a, you know, there's a place for us to seek out the talent as well.
Mm. It's like a pipeline issue.
Mm.
You mentioned, you know, that you sort of faced challenges through your career. Can I ask you a sort of a direct question about what are you most proud of so far in life or work?
So, well, we talked a bit about resilience. I had an awful thing happened to me when I got married for the second time. And I want to talk about it because I think it's really important that people can look in on someone's career and think, oh, this all looks fantastic and what a great story. But we all have setbacks along the way. And my second husband, unfortunately, turned out to be a con man and sort of took all my money. Right underneath my nose, I didn't realise. Really had a challenge then with my career because it took a lot of my confidence away. And unfortunately, he went to prison and he died in prison. And the whole thing was hugely traumatic. So what I'm proud of is the fact that I went through that, but also maintained, you know, my confidence, my career. I mean, I wouldn't have got through it without my friends and family, that's for sure. But I'm really proud of the fact that I don't want anybody to have to go through that, but I have been through it and I have come out the other side, and actually I'm still doing great and I got myself back on my feet. And, you know, it was really, really difficult. But it's such a learning and lesson that, you know, people just, you read these stories and you think, well, how can these people have not noticed things were going on? But you just, if you're very trusting and you're very busy, you don't always know what's going on. So I'm very proud of the fact I got through that. In fact, I think work got me through that, if I'm honest, because just the routine and the normality of just keep going. And so I'm very proud of that. I suppose at work, I'm just really proud of the people that I've worked with who are doing so well in the industry. I just look at, especially a lot of the females that I work with. I mean, you know, the SVPs, MDs, CEOs. So I love that. I'm very proud of that.
Thank you for sharing that. It was, you know, it was something that I was aware of, and I think what's incredible is how you have got through and you remain such a funny, wonderful, confident person. I can't imagine what it must have been like, but I'm so pleased to see that you did manage to get through it.
And thanks.
Yeah, so what does next year look like for you?
It looks quite busy. obviously I'm, you know, just back starting my new role, so there's a lot going on with that, with the team, expanding the team, also just a lot of travel, which I love. So I've already been out to Seattle and really looking forward to going to Cannes with as part of my new role. We're working really closely with Microsoft Advertising, so really trying to get, you know, talk about the Microsoft narrative. But more importantly as well, you know, the next sort of year, we've got a lot of, in our family, we've got lots of really significant birthdays and sort of milestones. So we're going to spend quite a lot of family time celebrating our family, actually. So we've got a lot of that going on. And then my husband has a significant birthday, so we are going to be doing some things for that. So a lot of celebration, I would say. A lot of celebration and growth is the next 12 months.
Love that.
That sounds amazing. Before we move on to the final section of the podcast, I just wanted to come back because you briefly mentioned your cousin earlier.
Yes.
And you said that we might talk about them a bit later. So I just wanted to check if you want to talk about that first.
Yes. So just somebody else that had a really big impact but wouldn't know it.
Right.
So there was another Jane Loring. Well, there's probably loads of Jane Lorings, but she was another Jane Loring in our family. And my father's brother moved to Australia, so I hadn't really met her. And we were going out for my father's, I think it was his 50th birthday, I can't remember, it was a significant birthday, and I went with him. And I stayed with Jane Loring, and we just got on so famously. But unfortunately, when I got to Australia, she said to me, I've got to tell you something, I have been given probably at the most 18 months to live. I've got terrible breast cancer. But she said, it's not going to stop us having a really good road trip down to Margaret River, and we went wine tasting, and she was just brilliant and such an inspiration. And actually, she lived for 8 more years, and I spent many times going to see her. She moved to Dubai and I went and saw her there. But she was so brave and such a resilient, funny person that just to the very end, she came to London to see us, and she died a few weeks when she got back. But she just would not stop, and she would not give up, and she just had the most brilliant approach to life. And she just, I learned so much from her that she probably would not know now, but just somebody that's always there sort of as a voice that you know, come on, you can get on with it, and you can enjoy things, and just a brilliant human being.
Oh, she sounds incredible. Okay, so let's now move on to the bit of the podcast where we do our quick fire personal questions. So what's your idea of a perfect weekend?
Going to the theatre.
Not being on the stage.
I really love going away for the weekend, actually. But if I'm honest, sometimes just staying in London, going to something really fantastic at the theatre is one of my... I go to the theatre all the time, so I've seen all sorts of good and bad. But I do love that.
What did you go and see most recently?
I went to see something. We live in Barnes and we have a little local theatre, and they had something called The Push, and it was absolutely brilliant about, I don't know if you remember, the cyclist that ran into the woman on Putney Bridge and knocked her in front of a bus.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was brilliant. And I've just booked for People, Places and Things in the West End in a couple of weeks. But I'd go and see all sorts of different things.
Fantastic. And let's say there was a movie about your life. What would the tagline on the poster say?
Well, it's pretty dark humour, but my friends do say four weddings and a funeral, because I have had four weddings and a funeral. So, unfortunately.
Do you know, so, yes, I love a bit of dark humour.
Yes. Exactly. I'm all so for that would have to be it, I'm afraid.
Changing gear here. One of my favourite questions. How would you fare in a zombie apocalypse?
Really badly. I'm not practical. I'm quite a scaredy cat. I'd probably just, I don't know, cling on to someone like you, Tamara. So not well at all.
I think that's true for most of us, to be honest. How would your friends describe you?
Well, I did ask some of them, and was laughing about this with my friend the other day. So the themes that come up seem to be funny, loyal, and quite annoying.
That's only your closest friends asking. You're saying that, right?
Yeah.
And your sister.
Yeah, exactly.
What's your karaoke go-to song?
Jenny from the Block. Everyone calls me J-Lo. That's it.
Every time.
Perfect.
I love that. You have it straight, ready, already. Jane, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. And thank you for being so open and sharing that, you know, what goes on behind the scenes for everyone. And as you say, you know, everyone has their own challenges. I really appreciate you coming and sharing with us.
Pleasure.
Is there anything that we didn't ask that you wanted to be asked? Or do you have any last sort of closing comments for us?
I think you've asked me quite a diverse set of questions. I've absolutely loved being on here and chatting to you. I suppose just you know, going back to the, you know, everybody has their setbacks and challenges, and career-wise, career's been great, but, you know, things don't always go to plan. And I would just say that, you know, anybody wants to reach out or have a chat with me if they're going through anything challenging, I've always got an open door. And just a massive thank you for inviting me on to talk. It's an absolute privilege.
You've been listening to Genuine Humans, brought to you by Social Element. If you loved what you heard, remember to rate, review, and subscribe.